The Breakfast Club.
One of the things that's been happening at our home has been a real embracing of home economics as a subject that's a school subject to be done at home. So the amount of biscuits and cakes and these sorts of things that have been made and then subsequently consumed is causing some real concern in the house. Real concern.
Right. So is this a cure for boredom, or is this a part of a curriculum?
Well, the kids are doing quite well with the cooking. Did you do home economics at school?
No.
Do you know what home economics is?
Oh, only through American movies.
Oh, right. Okay.
Back when I was a teenager.
Yeah. So cooking was
basically cooking.
So I think a fair bit of it's got to do with boredom and giving the kids something to do and all that sort of thing. But they're learning and they're cooking quite well. But geez, there's been a lot of food consumed in the last couple of weeks.
It's a danger. It's a danger.
Oh, dear. Some of the biscuits that have been made and consumed. Off the charts.
Could you not just stack them away for another day? Could you?
Well, you got to eat them fresh.
Right. Right.
So I would like to ask you, and on the SMS 0416 90 50 52 before we get into more serious things, is when you if you were to open a packet of, say, Tim Tams or shortbread creams or chocolate teddy bear biscuits, a packet of biscuits.
I would never open a pack of shortbread creams.
What is the appropriate allocation? Is it two? Is it one? Is it four? What's deemed appropriate? If you open a packet of biscuits for one, say, if you've got a hot beverage and you take with you a couple of biscuits or one biscuit, what is the acceptable amount to take?
Two.
Two?
It's always two. If you're having a hot beverage, the appropriate, the ratio of biscuit to beverage is 2-1. It's been a well-known formula
for years. So if you have three cups of tea, do you have six?
Yep, 2-1.
Yeah.
That's the ratio that's been around since my grandmother was making hot beverages and having biscuits at her house. 2-1. It's always been 2-1. Sometimes, we'll go back for a second. So it's 4-2. And that causes problems because you run out of biscuits pretty quickly when it happens. So you've got to make sure that there is a distribution to the rest of the familia before you go back for the second beverage.
Mm.
So that's important too. So the ratio has got to be equally distributed. But then the ratio stays the same, 2-1. What's yours?
I don't have rules, unsurprisingly. It depends on how hungry I am. But, I've been working on the biscuits, just taking them out a little earlier. See, I've learnt the trick, because what I would do is I'd leave them in a bit long to get that real golden brown type situation.
Right.
But then by the time of eating them, I felt that they're overcooked. So I'm taking them out a little bit earlier and just letting them rest. And as a result
like
of that,
steak.
They're cooling. And they're just binding together okay, but they've still got that sort of Subway cookie softness to them.
No, I don't mind that process. I think that's a solid process. That's actually shrewd cooking. Shrewd home economic.
I'm learning. I'm learning all the time. Anyway, so
definitely two biscuits only coming through. Although one biscuit a night with a cup of tea, says Muffer, per person. So Muffer goes the 1-1. Definitely not the whole packet, says the two biscuit person. But there's a couple of different varieties coming through. The 2-1 is the most common. The 1-1 from Muffer is controversial, but we'll see what sort of support he gets off the SMS on that.
Juppy says a packet of biscuits is a snack. You're a grown-up, Whitey. You can eat as many as you like. And I think this is the thing. I've been conditioned into only having two. I think I'm the same as you, too. But I can eat as many as I like because I'm the boss.
Well, you are. You are.
At home.
Well, you're part of the leadership group anyway at home. I'm not perhaps sure you're the boss, but you're part of the leadership group. Problem with being the boss and having that mindset is that things can go awry real quick.
And they have. So my next question to you,
yes.
And again, I want some SMS contribution to this. There's lots of text messages coming in, and there is quite a few that are banning biscuits in the house.
Banning?
Yes, because of the allocation of ratio, one packet per beverage.
Now, we had an issue talking about your home economics. William has decided that he's an Anzac biscuit specialist.
All right.
And
well, they're healthy.
Well, I'm not so
sure
about
that. They've got sort of cereal type stuff
in them. I'm not so sure about that. But he's a bandit because he's a little pig as well. like the rest of us, and he's become the specialist, so he just keeps cooking Anzac biscuits.
Yeah.
We've had to put a stop on that.
Yeah. It's good. I like that.
No, it's no good.
Well, Anzac biscuits aren't that easy to make.
Well, he's doing a good job then.
That's good.
I don't know how he does it, but anyway, he gets a snack out of it is a great result for him, so he's taking charge of that.
There's another one here. Oh, so there you go. It's from the baker. I was about to say the baker would be proud of my cooking at the moment. Always take our cookies from oven just before they look ready. They continue to bake as they cool down. That's exactly what I've experienced. There you go.
This is real steak activity.
So the question I have for you, oh, mate, FMP wonders why he has gone back to the regime every 3 months. That's exactly right. I'm about to... I was doing quite well with my regime, wasn't I?
You were.
Yeah.
You were.
Note the past tense.
You do have...
I was doing really well.
You do have...
It's just unravelled.
Interesting relationship with your regimes.
Mm. So we've got a long way to go, and we know we can match up with the best.
With the current climate, this is just the way you got to do things at times.
With the new concussion rules, I think some players wouldn't be telling them, though. There'd be players out there that are going, I'm not going to risk missing time.
When a guy remains at a club, then can be incredibly encouraging for the future.
We want to do our bit to ensure that the games go ahead.
We've been really inconsistent. Good football clubs and good football teams don't do that.
Your ticket into the heart of football. Welcome to the Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum.
Yes, welcome one and welcome all to the Sanctum this morning. We head down to normally about Casey Fields around about this time, and Maxie's walking laps or is sitting in the grandstand with his pigeon friends having a great time. And I don't know where he is this morning, but let's find out. Max, good morning.
Hello, Half. Hello, Whitey. Yeah, grandstand again, Half. Grandstand down to Casey Fields.
Righto, any pigeon activity?
There's actually no birds this morning. I'm not sure what's going on. Might be a storm coming.
Are you the only one there yet?
Yeah, there's a couple of the high performance team in the gym, but in terms of players, I'm the only one here.
First. He's always first there, man, because
that's leadership.
That's what's made him a great player. No doubt about that. Can I ask you a question? Sort of doesn't have too much to do with anything, really, but there's a photo of you in the paper today, Max. In your bucket hat, your D's bucket hat, and your red training shirt, and your shorts, and your black undergarment there for your arms. And you're wearing your mask outdoors while you're training. Is that a new thing, or is that just something that happened for a period of time yesterday?
It was cold yesterday, and the face mask that I had actually kept me quite warm. My nose and my mouth were freezing. I put my face mask on and I'm warm again. So that's the reason.
Right.
I saw Herald Sun thought I was trying to hide. People think I'm really embarrassed about this mark thing. It's quite the opposite. But no, that was to stay warm, Half.
Righto. Okay. I wasn't aware that they'd be used for warmth. But good luck to you. You should have worn some tights as well, Max, if you're cold.
That's one thing I just say. I can wear anything above my waist, but just shorts below.
I'm okay with that. It's a philosophy I sort of run with too. Waist up warmth, we call it.
Yeah, correct.
It's the key to life. You mentioned the mark thing, so let's get straight there. There is a suggestion you say that people think you're embarrassed about being a stepladder for most of the players around the country. You're pretty happy with that? No issues from your end?
It's just... A part of the game, yeah. Waitman took a mark on me. Georgiades took one the other day, and we beat Port by 30 points. Like, it doesn't bother me one bit. The Liam Ryan mark, I still watch because I really enjoy my effort to get back. It just so happened that Bailey Fritsch let Liam Ryan jump on me, and then Jake Lever let Georgiades, and then Trent Rivers let Waitman. So I've had a word to all of them, and I've told them that over the next few weeks we got Rankin coming up this week, and then. Liam Ryan again the week after, so there's some guys that are going to do it over the next few weeks. So if they just don't mind putting a bit of body on, because my Instagram notifications, I don't know how many notifications would you get a day, Half?
No, I wouldn't even average one a day.
Yeah, times out by 2,000, and that's what I've received over the last 2 days. But
right,
yeah, it doesn't really bother me, to be honest. I enjoy. And it's not going to stop me going back and trying to get a mark.
Now, someone was saying yesterday, it might have been Jimmy saying yesterday, I can't remember, you're in the right spot. I mean, that's the spot you've got to be in playing your role, so chances are at some stage you're going to get hovered on. I must admit, though, when he came down, your face did seem to suggest, oh, bloody hell, not again.
Well, yeah, that's what my face looked like. I'm not sure if that's what I was thinking. It seemed like I actually worked my opponent out of the contest quite well, and I get grumpy if anyone comes over the top and I'm about to mark the ball, or thinking I'm about to mark the ball, and I think there was more of that.
It was extraordinary. We were talking about this yesterday. It's the last thing I'll say on it, but how small Cody is, to get as high as he did, considering how tall you are, it was quite the achievement.
I haven't got much for you, Whitey. he's got a good jump, and it was a good mark. I think the best one I've been involved in was Liam Ryan's, but to be honest, I can't see Georgiades and Waitman, where I watched Liam Ryan the whole time, so that's probably why I like his better.
You can see him coming, prowling like a panther. Hey, the game on the weekend, Maxie, what's been the wash-up from Melbourne's perspective? Because, obviously, difficult conditions early. It was a 1v2 battle, and you didn't really, I was there on Saturday night, you didn't really ever seem to have the game on terms. What was the wash-up from your assessment?
Yeah, it's a good question, Huff. We're not that worried. We played a much better brand of football than what we have against Hawks and GWS over the last weeks before. I know there's some stats around, which I don't really look into, but I'm going to give them to you anyway. That the expected score, which Champion Data does, had us in front by the end of the game, which shows that we're playing the right brand of football. Maybe there was a little bit about our entries inside 50 or our shots on goal, and vice versa. Maybe they were converting some harder shots on goal, but they probably just got out to too far of a lead. It was too much to peg back, and once we did, then we probably gave it our all to get back, and then they were able to steady and win by sort of the 3-goal margin. But I'm much happier with the brand of football we played on the weekend than what we had the few weeks before.
Now, I think that's fair from what had been happening the previous weeks. Are you getting any level of worry about what's happening? I mean, it's two wins in the last 6 weeks. There's been a draw in there as well, but two wins in the last 6 weeks. Is that starting to weigh on you?
It doesn't sound as good, that stat, if you put the draw in. So let's just say 2 from 6. No, it certainly doesn't. It worries me when we play like we did against GWS. That's probably the worst of the performances. And that will worry me. And if that's stuck on as a trend, it starts to worry. But the fact that we're able to play the game like we did against Port, a game like against Essendon, and then also what I think was a really good game against Western Bulldogs, it shows that we're on the right way. And teams are going to have form slumps, and we've sort of had ours in the middle of the year. And if I remember back to 2018, this is when we got on our run with 4 rounds to go. And it really matters just being in good form going into this last little bit of the year.
I want to ask you about that, Max. Has anything changed? And, I mean, you always, all teams are going to go through sort of waves with their form, but even from a training load to get yourselves ready for the finals, have things changed, or is it the opposition have kind of worked out a little bit more on how to play you after being such a dominant force in the first couple of months of the season?
I just look at the season, Huff. I mean, Whitey. I think Geelong and Sydney are pretty standout form teams of the comp at the moment, but going into that Western Bulldogs game, they were 3-3 and we were 2.5 and out of 6. Port and Brisbane have lost games over the last few weeks. North Melbourne are almost the form team of the comp. There's just so much going on within the season. It's so even. It's the most even of a season I've been involved in. No standout top two teams. The top eight's got 6 or 7 teams still going for it. I think it's just that. I think any team can win on its day. And we go to Gold Coast this week. Well, I think we go to Gold Coast this week. And they've taken it to Western Bulldogs and Brisbane over the last two and beat Richmond not long before that. So it just shows how even this competition is. And I think it's more that. I think maybe at the start of the year there was a couple of teams like us and Doggies that were on fire. But now everyone's found their feet and playing some really good footy.
So what does, and I accept all of what you've just said, by the way. So as a captain or as a leader, whether it's you or whether it's Simon as coach, are you having to calm the farm internally, or the way that it's been set up this year and the maturity of the group that's been spoken about a lot, it just happens naturally that panic doesn't set in?
I'm hoping it'll happen naturally. I haven't really been in this position, to be honest. Whitey, it's a unique position where you're sort of sitting in the top four, trying to consolidate your spot in the top four. We will have a top four battle at the end of the year against Geelong. That's if we're still in it. Where both teams will probably be fighting for a position in the top four. And I reckon this is the real exciting part of footy, and this is why people play footy. So I think it will naturally come. I think our players will naturally come to training, sort of buzzing around, and we've got a little journey ahead of us. We've got to go to West Coast, I think, for 8 days next week. So it'll be a good chance to bond the group together with the COVID restrictions and really attack this end of the year.
How do you cope with not knowing where you are going to play on this weekend? Because most people are saying, oh, you just got to be adaptable. You are playing Gold Coast. You could be playing them in Darwin. You could be playing them, as you said, on the Gold Coast. Who really knows? Does it play on your mind at all, or it's the new normal?
It is the new normal, but I would like to know if I'm travelling the day before or the day of. The day of the game travel is quite a unique sort of process where I'd like to know if I'm doing that beforehand. But and also, I think it's a 3 o'clock game, so if we're playing in Darwin, I'll bring some sunscreen, and that's Darwin. I think it's 32 during the middle of the day compared to a Goldie, which I think is 21. So there's some different unique. I think that's just this week because we're going up in the heat. But normally it doesn't seem to faze me. And to be honest, I don't think we will know. Our Perth game, we should know because we'll have a 7-day quarantine. It's usually on the Sunday night. But then we got Adelaide at the G. Who knows what's going on there? And then Geelong. So I don't think we'll know when we're playing for the rest of the year.
It is one of those things at the moment. It's difficult to keep on top of, no doubt. 3:10 it is at this stage, the Gold Coast Melbourne game, to be confirmed the venue. So we'll see more on that. Just on the you talk about bonding there. You're bonding with your midfield group. I'd love to get your take on your dominance from a ruck perspective on Saturday night and the way that the Bulldogs played that. Are you finding that because you are such a presence around those situations now, and they probably didn't have their number one ruck out there too often? Well, Steph Martin's obviously not there at the moment. 67 to 18 hitouts, Max, and then 41 to 49 clearances. Are you finding teams are almost planning to lose the hitouts and try and work the ball out of those situations?
I'll go into this a bit. It was quite a unique battle. They obviously recognised that there might be some ruck dominance, and they played two extra mids a lot of the time. So in there was our four guys versus their six, seven guys.
Yep.
So we were incredibly outnumbered. We won first possession, which is where I hit to my midfielder and they get a disposal. We won that by 15.
Yep.
So that's to then lose clearance by 9 means, without being great at maths, 24 of our first possessions have gone the other way. So it's their pressure and their swarming and their outnumbering that probably got to us.
Yep.
Where we thought we'd be able to make it back with Jake Lever or Trent Rivers being free in the back line, it just didn't work that way with the wet game. I think their advantage sort of helped them win the game, being able to have those extra numbers around the ball. And like I said, I'm not too worried about our chemistry. I think I was able to find Clayton probably the most I have this year, and we had some good waxing going on there. But it was just our ability to get that next disposal to be able to clear the ball and then keep it in our forward half that we lacked. And that's good planning from Bulldogs, and they executed it well. They knew we were going to tag Libber, and Libber went to the non-dangerous parts of the stoppage and allowed some of his free guys to be able to get to work. So it was something we can write down for next time we play Doggies, which we hope we do, and see if we can capitalise on that dominance.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. They did seem to have the inner and the outer ring covered pretty well on Saturday night, which did pressure that first possession, as you rightly say, which got a ball back to them quick smart, and they had the exit strategy as well, which was good planning, as you say. So you lose no confidence from that. You know that you can hit your mids as well, but you'd probably have to have another layer to your game next time you meet them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I mean, we could come up and man them up within our stoppage next time. We could play it differently. There might be different tactics with my ruck work or with Clayton's patterns. We tried sort of punching the ball out of there, and that seemed to work.
Yep.
At times, but I saw Oscar McInerney against Gold Coast last week. It certainly worked against a less dominant ruck. He was able to punch the ball and clear the ball that way. So there's different ways you can do it, but Doggies sort of outplayed us in that general area. But what we did get confidence from is probably my hand to Clayton's chest. So we just got to work on that next bit, being able to clear it.
The clearing tap is a very old school thing, Max. Back in the old days, they just get it and whack it and just see what would happen on the back of that. These days, it is a bit more craft driven, the job and the position. Is there an element of the game that, from your perspective, you actually could use that more effectively, more often, the clearing tap?
There is. You need to have a lot of teams sort of have numbers on their defensive side of the stoppage. So if you're punching the ball forward, you tend to be punching it to their numbers a lot.
Yep.
I know, like, for example, if English punched the ball forward, we had 6v4 in our back line, so it would have been going to our numbers. So sometimes it doesn't work, but the way Brisbane do it, they set up really well to be able to get their numbers surging onto the ball. And it's a lot harder for rucks these days. I mean, centre bounce, we're jumping off 2 metres, not back in the old days where it was 15 metres and you get a good run-up. And also at ball-ups and throw-ins, you're keeping a metre before you can do any work on your opponent. So it's quite hard to punch the ball forward anyway. But it's definitely a tactic you can use.
He's a remarkable player, Clayton Oliver. And, I mean, on the weekend, he pretty much had double-figure disposals in the first 10 minutes of the game. And some of the games he's played this year, I think, are some of the best games anyone's played this year. What's he like when he's in that vein of form out on the field? Does he talk much to you? Is it just a nod and a wink? How do you work with him?
We've got some continuity in the guys we play in the midfield now, Whitey, and myself, Clayton, and Christian have played a lot of footy together over the last 3 or 4 years. They're both north of 100 games and right in their perfect time to be able to dominate the competition. And Clayton won out. We have a trademark player that we give during the week, which was yesterday, and Clayton won. And we show a little bit of a highlights package of what he did. And I was sitting in awe. I couldn't believe some of the stuff he was doing. His craft around the ball is some of the best. It was quite for the spectacle to watch on the weekend, watching Clayton and Christian play Bont, Libber and McRae.
Yeah.
I think would have been great to watch because they're five different players, but they're five of the best midfielders going around in the comp at the moment, and we got two of them. I'm really happy to be playing to Clayton, and he is a talker, Whitey. He does talk. He's got an incredible will to win. And the balance he has with the other two in there of Vines and Track is really good.
So he seems to have gears where when your team needs him the most, he does seem to lift. The game in Adelaide where it was only a draw, you lost at death, but the way he brought you back into that game was staggering. So will he say to you out there, all right, I'm ready to go here, Maxie, let's go? Or does he just let his actions do the talking for him? Is it a conscious thing? Because we've talked to Marcus Bonapelli about this, about when he goes to another level, does he sense that time or does it just happen naturally?
You just know. I mean, this touches on that bit of the will to win.
Yep.
I've never seen anything like it from a person in Melbourne Football Club and just wanting to win a game of football so bad. I mean, we all want to win, but Clayton's last quarters, I mean, if you went through, I know his first quarter was unbelievable this week, but if you went through his last quarters throughout his career, especially in tight games, he does rise to another level. Yep. And sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes. But that's what happens when you put yourself in that position. You can miss it sometimes as well. But he's playing some seriously good footy this year. It's going to be an interesting best and fairest run for us. I think those two boys have been standout all year, and then you can add a couple of defenders, and it'll make it quite interesting.
There might even be a ruckman polling some votes in that too, Max, through the journey.
There might be
a sneaker couple home, I reckon.
He's been good, Luke Jackson, but I don't think he'll poll that well.
You're an idiot. Hey, has anything changed at training in the next month, freshen things up? We've touched through the journey of how long the year is and how much of a grind it can be. You know, you've been really positive. I imagine on the back of some great performances of your team through the year, and that makes it a lot easier. But do you have a bit more of a 5-minute fun session as part of it? Does anything change to freshen things up, to get the energy flowing for the back end of the season, for a finals campaign coming?
Normally it naturally changes just because of the amount of days between games. So chucking like a 5-day break and then chucking a 10-day break, and naturally it changes, and naturally you get some days off, or you do some different stuff for training because it's a 5-day break, and that sort of happens. But we've sort of had a few 7-day breaks in a row. We played a lot of Saturday nights, Saturday games, and It is probably getting to that mundane little period now where they will change some stuff up. But, I don't think we have that issue just because of the position we're sitting in, and boys are really excited to come to work at the moment with COVID going on and not much being able to do outside of the club. Everyone's loving being at the club as well. So hopefully COVID ends tomorrow, but not COVID, but the lockdown.
Well, hopefully that doesn't end. Do you know something? Have you got some word?
Yeah, so apparently there's a new vaccine and we're all going to get it by the end of the day. No, it certainly is a fun place to be at the moment. I love footy and I loved coming in when we were 17th, but I don't think we have the issue with the boys at the moment.
Well, just on that, the whole vaccine thing, it's a topic clearly of discussion for everyone at the moment. Would you be for all the players getting vaccinated so that you do have a level of certainty that, not certainty, I suppose, but stability that everyone can move forward from the game's perspective, we can keep it rolling?
I sort of walked into that one, didn't I?
You did.
I mentioned it. I mean, it's just one thing that the media manager says, to say, don't talk about COVID, and I brought it up myself. I'm personally, my views, I'm all for it. But I understand there are some different views of different players, and it'll be a touchy thing if they do mandate it or anything around that. Our doctors chatted to us. It seems like it might be an end of season if people are interested in it. I'm not even sure if we're eligible for the vaccine at our age, but I know you're quite different there, Half, but sorry.
That's nasty.
That was harsh. That was harsh.
Nasty.
I mean, that'll play out at the end of the year for us.
I wanted to ask you, Maxie, about Ben Brown, because my personal view is you look better when he's out there. But he's someone that is just desperately trying to get form and add value to the team. You can see the stress on his face every time he gets a shot at goal. He wants to kick it. He's trying so hard. Talk us through that process at the moment with someone that has kicked so many goals over his career.
Yeah, he's in some pretty good form for us, to be honest. I know his numbers may not say that way, but he's creating a really good contest. He's getting some shots on goal. I think he might have had four or five
on
the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're really happy with what he's bringing out on the field. And his set shots hasn't been a problem his whole career. So it's something that he's got to work on at the moment. But he puts in the most work. And the amount of work we do on our goal kicking and then for the results we've got in the last two or three weeks, it doesn't sort of add up. So I've always been a big believer, if my marking's off and I go work on my marking, it tends to be a little bit of a delay. There can be 3 or 4 weeks before my marking comes back. It's like a delay effect. So you almost got to work on your marking the whole way through so you never have that dip. But I think that could be happening with our goal kicking. Maybe maybe a couple of people might have taken it easy a couple of weeks ago and there might be a little bit of delay effect. But I've got no doubt that Benny Brown will be kicking some goals for us because it's very uncharacteristic, some of his misses on the weekend. And I've seen him train all this year and I've been a fan of him his whole career, and he's been slotting them for years.
Yeah, it just feels like he's almost trying too hard because he obviously has been out of the team for a large portion of the year. He wants to be there when the whips are cracking, but you can see it's not far away, and it could be one of the keys to you come the business end of the season.
Yeah, I don't think he has that worry regarding his spot in the team at the moment. He's a pretty confident man, and I think he knows that his position in this team is where it is right now, to be full forward for the club and take us to a flag, and I reckon he plays like that at the moment. So I think the goal kicking thing's quite separate to whatever's happening with him in terms of thinking he can get a game and whatnot.
I'm with Whitey. I reckon he looks better when he's out there. So we'll see what Simon Goodwin and the coaching staff think about all that. Maxie, I know you've got work to do, so we'll let you get to that, mate. Always great to have a chat to you on the Inner Sanctum. We appreciate your time, buddy. Good luck this week against the Suns.
No worries, gents. Looking forward to your tweets about Olympic sports that you don't know about, Huff.
Yeah,
I'm on
that's
fire.
Exactly right.
Absolute fire, you know it.
Spot on, Max.
I've got a great read on sport and people, as you well know. Thank you, Max. Max Gorn, the captain of the D's with us in the Inner Sanctum. He knows that I know K1 paddling.
Half and Whitey. This is RSN. Breakfast Club.
It is. Let's talk some Bulldogs footy, because Baileydale has had an outstanding year for the Western Bulldogs. They are the best team in footy at the moment. Top the table, he's played every game, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Bailey.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. The best team in footy, do you think you are? The ladder says so.
The ladder obviously says that, but we know it's such a tight competition this year. Melbourne have got the better of us early on in the year, and it was obviously good to get a win and really sort of set up our season on the weekend. But, yeah, it's so tight at the top, and obviously there's a few teams fighting it out for the eighth spot there at the moment. But we know from previous years that anyone can win it from anywhere, and, we're always going to be on our toes.
Psychologically, how big is that win against the Ds? Because there had been some challenges against some of the better teams that you hadn't quite stepped up to this season, but you did it, and you did it emphatically on Saturday night. How big is it psychologically?
Yeah, it's a really important win. Obviously, we probably didn't play our best footy against them early in the year, and we've had our challenges over the last few weeks. We haven't probably played our best footy, but to come out and do what we did, it was really important for our season. And especially with a few guys going down early in the game, Alex Keith, obviously, and then losing Ed halfway through the third quarter, I think. It was a really, really good win.
Rap, we're talking to you, Bailey. In our house, you're one of our favourites. The three of us have got you in fantasy teams, and we're loving the amount of footy you're getting in a completely different role. Take us through how it all happened, because you've become a really important player for the Dogs, playing differently to what you've played in the past.
Yeah, obviously the role came pretty late in the pre-season. Bevo threw me down back, and I thought I must have been going pretty bad as a forward at that stage to get thrown down back. But it's worked out pretty well, and it's been good to have a consistent year down there. And hopefully I can keep growing as the year goes on.
So talk us through the role that you've got, and we often talk about players that have a license and that sort of thing. I mean, you're such a beautiful user of the footy. You're averaging 24 disposals a game. You very rarely waste it. Have you got a bit of a license, or have you got a really specific role to play?
I wouldn't say I have a license. I just got to go in and defend first. That's your main priority as a defender, is to get back there and try to stop them from kicking goals. So I try to do that the best I can, and then obviously when I have the ball, I try to use it as well as I can and set up my teammates. And I don't have a license. Obviously, we got Caleb play back down there on the weekend after Keithy went down, and he's such a star and sets us up from behind. So he's probably got a little bit more of a license than me.
Is it a role that you'd played at all as a junior or at VFL level? Because it seems to have come quite naturally to you.
I never actually played in the back line growing up. I was always sort of a winger half forward, and obviously the wing role, you can sort of sit behind the player a little bit and read the player. It's probably a bit of a different role than trying to compete up forward. But never played it growing up. It's been a really good change, and I'm loving it at the moment.
Well, it seems to be working pretty well for you and the Doggies. There's been a lot of players come into this team. You've played 41 players so far this year, the Western Bulldogs. How's it going to look coming to finals time? How big is the pressure going to be for spots? And is that evident at training at the moment?
Yeah, it's so good to have such a good list that if we need to call upon anyone, they can just come in and play the role that's required. I think I don't know how many we've played. I think it's pretty much everyone on the list. So to get that experience into guys and debut a few this year has been really good. And obviously, there's a lot of pressure for the spots in the finals. There's going to be guys coming back over the next few weeks that are going to be pushing for selection as well. So it's going to be interesting. Lucky I don't have to pick the team, but it's a good problem to have, I guess.
Well, I don't think your position's up for grabs, so I think you'll be fine. What about Josh Shackey? Played back on the weekend. Alex Keith went down, so probably that probably helped him, I think, in terms of the structure of the team. Is that something we'll see more of?
I think so, yeah. Shaq's, I think, been playing in the VFL for the last couple of weeks as a backman, and he's obviously got really good skills, and when the game's in front of you, it's a lot easier to get involved. He played a really, really good game on the weekend, and he slotted in really nicely, and it's been good to have him back there.
Well, he did a good job on the weekend. Thought he played really well. And the Cody Waitman situation, I mean, he's become a bit of a cult hero in the last month of footy. Took a big hanger in the VFL against the Blues I saw early in the year, where I saw I first acknowledged his athletic prowess. He's a real bubbly sort of dude, they tell us around the footy club. When he's taken big hangers on Max, does that go even bigger?
Yeah, he's a really, really bubbly dude, Cody. Yeah, he's quite a funny fella. He's got an absolutely amazing aura about him when he's up and about. But he's been a bit quiet. I haven't really seen him too much around the club the last couple of days. He's
not coming to training.
A bit low key. But yeah, it was an absolute massive hanger, and I'm sure we'll hear about it over the next few days in our meetings.
Well, he's taking liberties, not going to training. He's taking hangers, just having
he's
day off.
Contracts and all sorts of things.
Who is, while we're on that, Bailey, and don't be afraid to go hard here, who is the coach's pet?
Coach's pet? Oh, I wouldn't say coach's pet, but Bevo loves Bonty, obviously. He is a star, and they've obviously got such a good relationship. And, yeah, he's won a few games off his own boot this year, Bont. So, yeah, it's probably him.
Yeah, probably hard to argue with, I suppose. He's pretty handy. When he's out there doing his thing, and you're right, he has won games off his own boot and continues to have more impact game on game. Do you sit there and just watch and find yourself a spectator any times, or are you too busy in the moment?
A lot of the time, actually. he just stops the game and sort of just stops for him and just looks like he's just out there doing his thing. And some of those left-foot goals on the weekend were amazing. The way he just wraps around and puts them through, yeah, he's an absolute star.
Hard to argue with that. And you're having some sort of year too. We love watching you play, and it's been a great result for the Dogs sitting on top of the table. You've got the Adelaide Crows this week as the schedule goes. So hopefully that goes ahead, and we'll look forward to seeing you in action again.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Bailey Dale, who has had an excellent year for the Bulldogs.
Very consistent player.
He's averaging 24 touches a game off halfback.
That's right. A few of those are when he gets it out of the goal square, but that's okay, 3 points. But he uses it so well. So
yeah, if he gets
out of the goal square, runs his full measure, even maybe takes a bounce and then kicks it with the penetration he does, invariably they're almost to the wing with one disposal.
Yep. No, he's going beautifully, is Bailey Dale. And it's great to see him in really hot form for the Western Bulldogs. Now, Luke Davies-Uniac has been a great player for the Kangaroos this season. It's great to have him on the line. Luke, good morning.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
What's it like the week after a win? There's only been a couple through the journey this year for the Kangaroos. Has it changed the dynamic in the club?
Nah, it hasn't. We wrap those wins up for sure, and this one was a little different because our wins this year have normally come within a goal or two. So it was a little bit odd when we've, beaten the team by 40 points, but we'll take it.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, an interesting point you raise, that more often than not, when you do win, it's, you know, you're hard fought and it's down to the wire and you've got to come away late or hold on. But you dominated in the second half, particularly against the Blues on the weekend. Did you get a chance to enjoy playing and knowing that it was going to go your way?
Yeah, we did. We did out there. Once we stepped, like in the first half, we felt like they were getting a lot of score off our turnovers. So we knew we had to clean things up, and Noves gave us a good old spray at half time, telling us that we're not playing up to our level. So we really stepped up in that second half, and it was fun smashing the team for a little bit there.
Luke, I'm really, as I said earlier in the program, rapt that we're able to talk to you because you're one of the real success stories at North Melbourne this year with your improvement. Just even looking through your stats, you know, five of the last six games you've averaged over 20 disposals. You're starting to, you know, weave through traffic, and we're starting to see your tricks. Is this just natural sort of development as you're getting more experience, or is there something that happened that's seen the change in you?
Getting a lot more experience as well, and Ben Cunnington's obviously been a huge mentor of mine, and he's really just led the way and just telling me to back myself, and he's putting me in the slot a bit more now that he's getting a little bit older, which is nice of him. So yeah, I can owe a lot of stuff to him, and I'm just finding more confidence each game.
Yeah, so sorry, Huff. So where does that confidence come from? As I said, is it just playing more? Have there been moments where you've gone, I can actually do this, or you've got a bit more time than you thought you had? Because I'm noticing particularly through traffic how impressive you've been with the ball in your hand.
Yeah, I think that confidence just comes from playing a lot of games and just putting yourself in the slot at most of the stoppages and stuff like that. So I'm just, yeah, like I said, I'm just gaining confidence every game, and you sort of pick up little things of, like, you know, I might have mucked up before, but, like, you watch it over and you know that you've got more time. And so I sort of just look back on those things after each game and just realise that you've got a bit more space and time than you think you have, so...
Can I take you back to that statement you mentioned before about having Ben Cunnington as your mentor, and take us a little bit into that relationship and what that looks like? Because I have nothing but admiration. I think most of the footy world has nothing but admiration for Ben Cunnington, the way he plays, the way he goes about it, and the way he impacts games. What does that look like from your perspective, that mentor relationship? What does he do with you?
When I first got to the club, he probably didn't realise that I was a good old country lad and pretty quiet personality as well, so he didn't speak to me too much and didn't realise I loved me surfing and fishing here and there. So we both had similar traits in that perspective. And he really just looks into more bodywork details than anything. And when I first got to the club, I was probably lacking that area. I sort of just came from junior levels of use my strength, being a bit bigger than anybody out there. And when I first walked in the club, just tore me to pieces in the intra clubs and stuff like that. So since I got to the club, it's always just been about body work. And you know, he sits in my review after games, and I sit in his just to pick up things from his game. And he's just a quiet guy, but we get along really nicely, just sharing a locker next to each other.
So do you spend any time on the boat looking for dangling the line and trying to catch one?
No, I haven't. I haven't got the invite yet. But he took the first years out, and they didn't catch anything. So he's not that good of a fisherman, I heard.
He talks the talk, but can't catch anything.
Yep. The Irish anglers, they reckon.
A couple of players I wanted to ask you about. Nick Larkey, obviously, has 7 goals on the weekend, and he commented on the fact that it was so much easier for him when the ball was being moved as quickly as it was. It seems a very popular member of the team, and 7 goals is a big number.
Yeah, the big sub kick in the 7. Yeah, he was telling us all about it after the game, so he made sure of that. But yeah, Subby's worked all hard all year. He's usually probably one of our only tours down there, but now we've got big Tristan down there. But he's been battling it all year, and it's good to see the reward. And he puts so much time and effort into his training, so. We expect probably more of those games come from Silv.
I do notice that when he has his shot for goal, he does seem to look up at the screen and just adjust his hair before he has his shot. I'm not sure whether you've noticed that, but it's
I haven't noticed.
Seems to do that a fair bit. Now, Dom from Reservoir is a big fan of North Melbourne. He listens to the show. He wants to know about Aiden Bonner.
Yep.
He wants to know about a couple of the other youngsters, Cobden and also Edwards. Will we see them before the end of the year?
Bonds is coming back from an ankle at the minute. He's played the last 2 cracky games when we were up in the Brisbane, and then he played on the weekend. So he should be fit and firing and ready to return either this week or next week. Chomp, he's put a lot of hard work in. He's had a horror run, and he's looking more excited than ever. So, and Vic Jacob, he's nice, he's fresh, and he's new. You always see him with a smile on his face as soon as you walk in, but he's still learning. He's still learning and getting his, equipped with running patterns and all that forward craft. So he's going to be a good player.
All right, there's an update for you, Dom, for some of the players outside the list at the moment. Down at Tassie this weekend against the Tats, the Cats. You find out a fair bit about your brand and your capabilities this week against the Cats, do you reckon?
Exactly right. Well, we versed them early in the year, and we did all right that game too. We were competitive all day, and the format we're playing at the minute, who knows? We're just going to stick to our game plan, and let's hopefully we can just put it on the Cats.
Take it to them. Take it to them, mate. Go get them. Are you in the crypto horse? There's a bit of a crypto horse going around at the Kangaroos, I'm hearing. You involved there?
No, I didn't get sucked into that. So. That's all Jizer. I'm not sure what he's thinking, but yeah.
It's an unusual world that we live in. But it's great to see you playing great footy. Loving the way you're going about it. Good luck this weekend against the Cats down in Tassie.
Cheers, boys. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. A young man going places. He is 46 games into his career. Sweet spot for him. Luke Davies-Uniac from the Kangas. Nice to have you with us. Rocket Ead's going to join us after 8 o'clock. Looking forward to catching up with Rocket and Charlie Rowbottom. You mightn't know too much about Charlie at the moment, but you will tonight. She'll be the number one pick in the AFLW draft for the Gold Coast Suns. Brother James is at Sydney playing for the Swans, and a fine young player too, just by the way. But she's going gangbusters and will be the number one pick tonight. So she'll join us before we hand over to Michael Felgate and Racing Pulse. And he in turn to Gareth Hall, who's back today, which is great news for our listeners because they love Gareth, and fair enough too, because he's a star.
A bit of a special coming up with Racing Pulse. They're doing a bit of a sort of a spring futures type thing with Dino and Gator and a few others, so that will be good. West Indies all bowled out for 152. That just happened a short time ago from 45 overs. Evan Lewis, 55, not out. He kind of carried his bat. He was he got subbed out with concussion and then came back in. So I didn't think you could come back once you've got out, but more of a protocol thing. So that's the Australian situation. Stark, 3 for 43. Agar and Zampa, 2 each. Also, Hazelwood, 2.
All right. That's the situation in the Windies, Australia, a third one day. What about the moment yesterday when Ariana Titmus took down Katie Ledecky in the 400-metre freestyle? It was a race for the ages. Two Goliaths of the pool, and boy, it was good to watch. I wonder what it would have been like as the father of that young woman who is dynamite in the pool. Steve Titmus is her father, and he's been good enough to join us. Steve, good morning to you. Steve, you with us? Oh,
that was a really good intro.
It's a good intro too.
It was a real Bruce McAvaney sort of emotion.
Even got dynamite in there.
Like, I know, that was good.
It was really well placed.
Do you reckon you could do it again?
Nah. well, Joey's trying to get him back on the line. That's a bit of a setback for us. I think he might have him. He might have him. So we'll see if we can track him down this time. Well, it was a great intro, Steve. You missed it. Welcome to the program.
Oh, look, fantastic. Good morning, everyone.
Great to have you with us. Hey, what's it like almost 24 hours later, what you experienced yesterday and the moment for Ariane?
Yeah, look, it's all still quite surreal. And, you know, last night, look, I've been absolutely so flat out that we probably haven't really had a chance to celebrate enormously, apart from obviously the actual moment and an hour or so after that. But, look, this morning I'm up and about and just looking back at it and reflecting on, I think the last 50 metres of that race has gone through my head about 1,000 times overnight. And, you know, wonderful moment last night. We had a chance to talk to Arnie via FaceTime, and she was sort of getting ready to go to bed, and we're just chatting away and telling her how much we love her and how proud we were of her. And she was, you know, the fact that, you know, she doesn't want to fully celebrate yet, obviously. She's still got 200 to go, and the 800 and the 4x200 metre relay. So no time for celebrations yet. We're just in awe about how she handles herself mentally with the whole thing. So, and I sit back and, yeah, look, how do I feel? Enormously proud. And enormously proud to think that our daughter has also given Australia a massively uplifting moment at a time in our lives when we've absolutely needed it.
It's on the podium for one of my greatest Olympic moments, Steve, watching it unfold. I can't tell you how proud I was, let alone what you must have been going through with your family. And the story is well told about moving from Tassie to follow the coach and give her the best chance. And it's, you know, the sacrifice the family's made for Arnie to get to this point and to have it realised. I get pumped when my daughter puts the plate in the dishwasher the right way. I get pride through that. I can't imagine what this journey has been like for you and to have that moment yesterday realised.
Yeah, and I think that's why we get very emotional about it, because there's so much vested in the whole situation. From, you know, when we moved up here to Tassie, Robin, Arnie and Mia came up 6 months before I did, because I stayed back to pack up the house and sell it to come up. And it's a case of where the responsibility as a parent is to provide a safe, stable environment and then allow your children to chase their dreams. And that's what we've always believed in. And when we made the decision, which we had to do fairly quickly, we couldn't say, oh, we'll look at it in 12 or 18 months time and see how we're going. We had to make it fairly quickly. So it was a case of working out exactly how we were going to do it. And, you know, and that's why it is so emotional, because there's so much vested in it, there's been so much time put in, and we're just enormously proud of Arnie that, you know, we provided the foundation for the opportunity. She's grabbed it with all that she's got and absolutely made the most of the foundation that we've given her, and she's grabbed it and produced, you know, an incredible performance at the perfect time.
Steve, I'm interested, there's been a lot of talk about Arnie's sort of her competitiveness and ferociousness, desire to win, but I'm interested more in the composure she's got for someone so young to be able to sort of play out that plan the way she did, but the way she carries herself in the spotlight. It's incredibly impressive for someone so young. Has she always been like that?
Yeah, look, I come from a sporting background where I played cricket in Tasmania, and my wife Robin was a former national sprint champion. And I suppose we just get it. We get how it's all meant to happen. And at home, we don't talk a lot about swimming at all. And that perhaps is one of the big secrets. Arnie comes home from training. We go, how did you go? He's doing that. Yep, great. So, and she likes to cook and do things like that. So if we talked about swimming a lot at home, the pressure would continue to mount. So I think that what's enabled her to be calm and how she is because we've literally not put any pressure on her to perform. We haven't had to motivate her at all. And we just haven't spoken at length at home all of the time about swimming. So we reckon that is part of the secret to it all, is to just try and provide and live in a normal life as possible while you're trying to swim at the Olympic Games.
And also the false start of last year and having to then sort of, and not really know 100% that this Olympic Games would happen this year. How difficult was that for her to stay focused, but also to stay at the top of her game for a longer period than what would normally be the case after the success at the Worlds?
Yeah, look, after it was called off, we had a lot of tears at home about all that. But I suppose we just kept the faith that it was all going to happen.
Well, it worked pretty well.
And, you know, it was simply a case of where we just had to regroup entirely with the whole situation, reset the button, and along with Dean, you know, map out the whole process.
It's an amazing story, and I've got a feeling we had the world champs a couple of years ago, as Whitey said. It's only just the beginning of an amazing career for your little girl, Steve, who's on the front page of every paper across the nation with a gold medal around her neck. I don't know how you could, I don't know how that works, so I can't imagine what you're feeling. But well done on behalf of the nation to you and the family, and certainly to Arnie. When you speak to her, send her our best. And she want to be a good cook. She's got a whole house of appliances from Harvey Norman I saw in the ad.
Probably a couple more coming, I'd imagine. A new coffee machine for us.
Right, I'll get Jerry onto it. Good on you, Steve. Thank you for spending some time with us this morning. Your daughter and your family's provided us with a moment we'll never forget.
Yeah, good on you guys. Thanks very much.
Great stuff. Steve Titmuss, father of Ariane. After the gold medal yesterday, 200 metres semis tonight too. She's up against Katie as well.
We obviously ran out of time. I was keen to talk to Steve about opening the batting with David Boone down in Tassie.
A topic for another day perhaps for Steve. But fantastic.
It's a rape in the door. I think he was quite keen to talk about it.
I think there would have been an opportunity and we might do it one day. I think it's worthwhile probably investigating.
The Breakfast Club brought to you by Tabs the Lock. New on the Tab app. T's and C's apply. Gamble responsibly. Gamblers Help 1-800-858-858.
All right, time to talk some footy with Rodney E. The Rocket is back with us on a Tuesday morning as always. Always a good chat with a man who's been there and done that. Rodney, good morning to you.
Morning, Daniel. How are you, buddy?
I'm
going
well. I'm very, very well. Thank you very much. How's your world? Are you busy? What's going on?
Busy just being inside four walls.
You sound pretty happy about that, Rocket.
It's a bit like that, isn't it? Not too bad. Still got a bit of stuff to do, but looking forward to getting out into society and the normal world, hopefully by tomorrow morning. So, fingers crossed, Daniel.
Don't get too excited. What we can do.
Always optimistic.
That's right.
That's not a bad place to start.
That's my problem. I'm always a glass half full and I usually get disappointed.
Mm. Yeah, that's a problem, isn't it? So, I think you become actually conditioned to it. So,
yeah.
Then you're just the normal average path of life. But anyway, you stay optimistic.
Being realistic and optimistic is important, Adam.
Yes. Can I jump in here?
Jump in.
I want to ask Rocket a question. The Carlton thing fascinates me, Rocket, because they're doing...
Yeah, I know. You were on that last week.
But they're doing their review, Now, I know what they're doing in their review is very different to what media commentators are talking about Carlton from outside the footy club. So I think that's really important.
Yep.
Because it's interesting that I feel that based off the performance against North Melbourne, the commentary's changed from David Teague being safe to David Teague in the gun on the basis of one performance. In fact, even one quarter, as Half was saying. So when you're part of a review, how important is it to not actually think about the results and more about the process, or is results actually important in a review? Does that make sense? It's a long question, sorry.
I think the reviewers have got to take it, be unemotional, which they're not attached to the club. So, and either a patch of good form or a really bad game doesn't affect what you come out with, the information that you've gathered. So I would think that the reviewers aren't saying this person should go or this person should go. It's about, well, this is an area of concern for A, B, C and D, whether it's fitness, whether it's recruiting, whether it's game plan, whatever the case may be, and actually disseminate the facts and put them across. Then it's up to the club to make the decision of which way they want to go, or do they need to make a change, or do they need extra support, or whatever the case may be. That's separate to what clubs will do depending on results. So I think there's still another layer to the review. There's the review, as I've just said, with the results and the way they're going, that's going to be a club decision, and that can even be based on what members say and memberships and all that sort of thing. Now that's the way the boards react as well. So I think there's two layers to it, and I think they're not mutually exclusive, to be honest. I think there'll be the reviewers, and they'll come up with their findings. And it's how the club interpret that and what they want to act on that. They can act on nothing on that if they want to. Then there'll be the results or the way they go about it. I think the biggest problem David's got is the pattern of defensive actions or lack of defensive actions. And that's a real pattern. So there've got to be some really strong questions asked about that. Is it coaching? Is it players not buying into it? Is it apathy? Is it whatever the case may be? So that may be part of the review, but that'll be really Luke Sayers and his board on the back of what they think is the right way to go ahead.
On that, Rocket, how quickly can you change a system that's been ingrained over 2 years or so now?
Say a couple of years
for David Teague and the coaching staff there at the Blues. He's very much an offensive-minded coach, and he's been open with that. He wants positive ball movement, and that's what he wanted to bring to the Blues. And he's done that to a degree, but as you say, on the flip side of that, when you haven't got the ball, there's got to be another layer to it. When you've been so honed in on one area, and you realise and identify really, really quickly and publicly that an element of your game is lacking, how quickly can you change that that's been ingrained for 2 years?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of thoughts on that. And it's interesting where the so-called experts say, Richmond, because they had the best system, that's why they're winning. You've still got to have some talent to implement a system. Now, players drop out, as we're seeing now with Richmond. The other thing with system and defensive system, and you can have the best system in the world, if you don't get effort and you don't put heat on the ball, it doesn't matter what system you've got. And to me, that's the nature of what's happening with Carlton. Sometimes their North just went straight through the middle with no intensity or pressure from the opposition. They weren't closing space. And you've got to put heat on the ball carrier, because that allows you the Liam Jones or the intercept markers to come into play, because they can roll off their man because the ball's just getting hacked forward. Well, there was no chance of doing that because there was no pressure on the ball carrier, which to me is effort. That's not a system. That's just effort and intensity. Coaching, this is a non-negotiable. This is the way we go about it. This is our key pillar to the way we defend. And there's none of that. And that's been the pattern, that lack of effort and the lack of urgency and intensity. So to answer your question, you can change that by strong demands. And this is the way we're going about it. This is what we do. You'll be selected on that. You'd want to be playing exceptionally well if you don't want to buy into this. And I certainly don't know, but it doesn't seem to be challenging enough for a lot of people who are consistently not buying into that effort part of the game.
Yep. Okay. That's fair. That is fair. And we'll move on from the Blues because they've got plenty of coverage. I want to talk about the Demons. We spoke to Max Gawn earlier this morning, Rocket. They've won 2.5 out of the last 6. And they were on top of the ladder, being the best team in footy all year to this point. No longer have that mantle. Are you worried? Are you seeing anything that is making them susceptible come a finals campaign that teams are exploiting?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Obviously, the Bulldogs allowed that they had the extra at the stoppage. Melbourne allowed that because they want to have intercept with Lever and May. Teams have woken up to that, so there's different ways. Now, you had a look at the Hawthorn game. They hacked the ball forward on purpose, kept it low, even bounced the ball inside forward 50. They either passed it or they tried not to bomb at all. Even when they were clear, they were really making them, which is a chaos ball, which doesn't suit the Melbourne defenders. So they need to tweak it a bit. There's still a fair bit to like about the Demons. They're still creating scoring opportunities. They're still moving the ball quite well. They're back in their, we go back to the system, they're back in their defensive system, which teams are changing their mode of attack to counter their defensive system. So I think they just need some tweaks. I think we mentioned a few weeks ago, you asked a question, I think it might be you, Adam, about teams, is it a blip on the radar or do we need to forensically investigate why we lose or what's going on? You cannot ignore anything. If you ignore something, say 6 weeks ago when they lost their first game, you're saying 2.5 out of the last 6 weeks, if you just park it, teams will actually investigate that more. So, and I think that's what's happened. So I think they need to investigate. I don't think it's an overhaul. I think it's just a slight tweak here and there. They're creating opportunities. Their midfield's still very strong. I wouldn't be worried, but by the same token, I would need to look at things and do we need to modify or have plan B when things like the Bulldogs, what they did with the stoppage, do we need to go up with them and leave a bit more space in our defence? But what I saw the other night, the Bulldogs were the better side, but they got back within a goal with 10 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And with Bontempelli changed. So it wouldn't surprise me in a final that result can be flipped. So, but I'm not worried, but I would need to maybe keep some things in the back pocket.
Whitey and I were talking yesterday. This is a question without notice, Rocket. Most of them are because we don't talk to you beforehand. in fairness. And we were talking about... I don't know why I say that, but I did. We were talking yesterday about our coaches of the year, who we would nominate as in the category for coaches of the year. Matty Nix came up for the job he's doing. David Noble got some love. Who else do we have? Ben Rutten as well, John Longmire, Simon Goodwin. Who do you think has, in terms of expectations pre-season and now what we're seeing so far, would fall into the Coach of the Year category?
Oh, I think John Longmire for me. Nobody expected them to be in the eight. Young squad. And really, the way they're playing, and have had Lance out for portions of this season as well, to be pushing for the top four. And people are now talking them about chance for the flag, which I don't think is realistic. I think there's still another season away. I think they're still too young. But to be in that conversation, I think they've done an outstanding job, and I think John's done an outstanding job as well.
I still marvel.
He's number one.
No, I think we sort of settled on that.
We settled on John, I think. Yeah,
we did talk about others.
Good outcome.
But I think, Rocket, the thing that I still marvel with Sydney is those senior players. Like Josh Kennedy and Luke Parker are the two that stand out
Parker,
to me.
Yep.
Just their ability to still play at such a high level, which creates demands on the younger players and by just setting such a high example. It's such a luxury. And it sort of stood out to me that when you look at, say, Fremantle and Essendon as maybe the next generation of teams coming through. I reckon Sydney, Freo and Essendon are kind of in the same bracket from where they were. That it's Sydney's leaders that find a way to set the example that perhaps Freo and Essendon don't have, at least at this stage. That's where the difference might be in the three teams.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt about that. And I think it was on evidence in the weekend with Sydney and Fremantle. Fremantle started okay, and then when it got really hard in that third quarter when Sydney got a run on, there was nothing as a fight back for me for Fremantle that actually stemmed the flow, and nobody controlled that. David Mundy's obviously leader, Fife, was off, but it really needed something from a two or three to be able to stand up to. He would just stop momentum to stem that flow. And you saw that with Fremantle against Geelong the other week as well, where they just the floodgates were open. It just stayed open.
And the flip side of that, sorry, Rocket.
And I think,
yeah.
I,
I was going to say the flip side of that in that particular game was that when Fremantle started well, it was Kennedy and Parker that actually started to push it back Sydney's way and the others came with them. And, Fife off, Mundy a bit quiet, but it was Brayshaw and Chera that were trying to get them going. They just didn't have that seniority, which is, that's what Sydney have got, and they can bank on them every week.
Yeah, I think Rampy as well down back. So they've got some... Hickey's been a really good player. He's playing his best footy at 31 years of age. So they've got a core of senior experienced players, A, who are playing well, but B, who know what to do at the right time when things aren't going well, and probably keep the others heads up. If that's
play
the right
way.
And I think, Essendon, not being harsh on them at all, but it's just they're young. Yeah. I think whether they're older senior players, they're more experienced players at 25, 26. They haven't got, except for Hooker, they probably haven't got another player who's 28 plus to be able to do the right thing. Stringer's not a leader. He's a dynamic player, but he should grow into being a leader, and I think that's what they need. But they've still got plenty of time. They're quite a young side.
Still plenty of time for us to talk about the year, Rocket. Next couple of weeks building up to a big finals campaign. Appreciate it, as always, on a Tuesday. Have a great day.
See you, boys. Have a good week and a good day. Hope we're back to normal tomorrow.
That'd be nice. Rodney Eade with us, Coach's Corner. He's optimistic about the world, and we think that's magnificent.
I don't know about that.
We'll get to a break. He's optimistic. Let's stay with it. Charlie Robottom to join us after this.
Harford and White. It's RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
That's a feel-good tune on a feel-good Tuesday, and if you're a young woman who loves AFLW, today might be your day. It's AFLW draft day, or draft night. Tonight, Charlie Robottom is the potential number one pick for the Gold Coast Suns, and she's been good enough to join us on draft day. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good on you. Great to have you with us on draft day. How are you feeling? Everyone's telling us that you will be... I can tell you probably will be, the number one pick for the Gold Coast Suns. How are you feeling on draft morning?
Oh, I'm pretty excited to see how it all pans out and see where all my mates go. So, pretty excited.
You've made a big call. You're a Melbourne girl, played the Oakley Chargers in the Premiership there, which was fantastic, and you've decided to nominate the Queensland area, the Gold Coast area, as your draft zone in the AFLW, which is a bit different to the boys' draft. Why'd you do that, Charlie?
Oh, well, just after spending year 12 in isolation and I'm a year out of school, I just want a bit of a change and thought when Gold Coast approached me, I couldn't really be more perfect. Yeah.
So there was plenty of options because there's 14 teams in the competition. They'd all would like to draft you if it was a national draft. If you were wearing navy at the end of tonight, I'd be wrapped. Not to be. And I'm a bit flat about that, but we'll work on that. So when you said that to your family, you discussed that with your family, like, what did they think? I mean, James is in Sydney, so it's not uncommon to have a Robottom interstate, but what did they think?
Yeah, so obviously after seeing James go up there, they saw how easy he transitioned and how professional he was about it. So, they were just excited for me and thought it was a great idea.
Why footy, Charlie? What got you into it? Was it your brother? Was it your family? Was it friends? How is it that you're going to go as a high pick in the draft tonight?
I don't know. I just started at school footy, just playing for fun, and then went down to East Melbourne Knights and then Oakley in year 10. But, always played for fun and just started taking it a bit seriously and probably a bit of dad and a bit of brother influence, kicking in the park and stuff.
Can you take your brother down? What sort of activities did you get up to in the backyard or at the park?
No, he more took me down, but, builds me up a bit.
And this is your chance tonight to get drafted. I mean, when you think about that and all you've done to get to this point, are you thankful it's finally here? Can you believe it's finally here? Or are you a bit anxious that it's here?
No, I'm very thankful it's finally here and that, it's a possibility for me to do this. I just never thought it would kind of be here because I've always just played for fun sort of thing. But, very, very happy and excited.
So what does it look like for you tonight? What happens? What's the structure going to be at home?
Obviously, a bit of COVID restrictions, just the family. Just going to watch it and yeah, see where all my mates go. We have a, I think we're having a Zoom with all the Oakley girls, which would be a bit of fun.
How many Oakley girls do you reckon will get drafted?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe that five.
Okay. Yeah, I reckon you might get five, maybe a few more too.
Yeah, possibly.
That's a pretty good team, that one. And so when do you know when you, if you get, well, you get going to Queensland somewhere, when do you move? Have you got all that sorted?
Oh, no, no, not really. Probably like late August. Pre-season starts September.
Yep.
So, yeah, probably late August, get settled.
Well, it's a great opportunity for you. You've had a great junior career. You're under 19 year with this year was through the roof with Vic Metron with the Chargers in that premiership, and you're a deserving number one pick for the Gold Coast Suns, Charlie. Good luck. Have a great day. Enjoy the moment, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you plenty more through the years.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Charlie Rowbottom. You will be hearing that name plenty more times today and tonight and tomorrow and for the rest of her AFLW career. She's a beast. She's a beast. Think Dangerfield-ish, powerful exploding mid that can push forward, do some cool things. Big unit. Yep. Number one.